I am Dr. Anton Bilczyk, Nadia's older brother.
And I'm the younger sister, Nadia Bilczyk.
We are inundated with misinformation as it relates to healthcare. And what we are trying to do with this podcast is to have a discussion based on facts, based on peer review publications, based on credible sources.
So join us so that you can live long, live strong, and live healthily. Well, a very good Sunday morning, evening, afternoon, wherever in the world you are. I'm Nadia Bilczyk, and you know I do a podcast with my brother, cancer surgeon and researcher, Dr. Anton Bilczyk, and it's called Live Long, Live Strong, Live Healthy. So, Ant, I'm going to ask you to introduce our guest, who is a fellowship-trained, board-certified neurosurgeon who specializes in surgical and non-surgical techniques. I'm going to ask you to introduce our special guest and the reason that we are so excited to have him on today.
Thanks, Nad. Dr. Brian Gantwerker is a well-known, outstanding neurosurgeon who specializes in the spine and also a good friend. And I couldn't think of a better topic than talking about back pain.
So interesting. And I know the both of you will appreciate this. Went out for dinner last night. Out of six people at dinner, five of the six have experienced back pain at some point in their lives, and they are probably watching us right now. So it's something that is so prolific. People experience back pain. Anton, you personally, as a surgeon who bends over for long periods of time, do you experience back pain?
Oh, this is very personal to me because, as you mentioned, I often do long surgeries. I'm staring into a robot. My head is leaning forward. And when you do complicated operations, your adrenaline's going. You don't have any sense of time. You just keep on going, and it's like being an artist doing a painting. And the next day, I really do feel it in my neck, my back. So this is very personal. And as we said at the beginning, it is so common. I don't know anyone that doesn't have back pain at some point in their lives.
So Dr. G, you
yes.
deal with individuals from mild to severe back pain. What is the thing you see the most?
I usually see, well, thank you, first of all, to both of you. It's such a pleasure to be on with the Bilczyks. And it's a real honor.
Bilczyks, so thank broadcast,
you.
Dr. G.
I was going to say, Bilczyks broadcast. And your brother lives down the street from me, so it's always really nice to see him, even not in passing. The commonest type of back pain that I see, I would have to say, is by far, it is the kind of back pain where you have just sort of what we call axial back pain. It's midline back pain, the kind of back pain that doesn't radiate around the sides or down the leg. That's the very common. And sometimes people call it sort of mechanical back pain. But in the parlance of the field, it's called axial back pain.
And I think the question, and Anton and I were discussing in detail, the best way to really capitalize on your knowledge today is, when does one come and see a Dr. G? Anton, have you ever thought of going to see a doctor for your own back pain?
Oh, I have. I mean, there's, you know, sometimes the pain is, you know, so severe that it's not relieved by anti-inflammatories. And I guess the question for Brian is just to kind of broadly discuss all the treatment options, because they're so, ranging from whether you take medication, whether you get a pain shot, whether you go to a physical therapist, or whether you see a back surgeon. So I think it'd be really interesting to get, Brian's input.
I think for the first question, which is, when would you see a neurosurgeon for your back pain? And I would say, if your back pain is extreme, and people say, well, what number should I give it? And everyone's sort of different on that, what's called the visual analog scale, which is the 0 to 10 your doctor asks you. And usually I say, if it's more than 5 or 6 or 7 out of 10, it's time to see somebody. Oftentimes people see their primary care doctors. They're very astute at knowing when to refer, but when your pain is severe, if it's disabling, especially if you can't work and can't sleep, that's my usual cutoff for it's time to see somebody. In terms of the definite, there's red flags, the obvious ones, which are your foot is flopping, it's very weak, or you're having trouble with your bowel or bladder. Those are absolute red flags and probably should be seen in the emergency room, but certainly it's time to contact somebody if those things happen. In terms of the different treatments, rarely is surgery the first option, but sometimes patients come to see me who already had all the options. So primarily, if the patient can, they could take anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen or naproxen sodium. I prefer ibuprofen because it tends to be a little bit more efficacious for back pain. And different kinds of back pain, because not all that's back pain is spine. There are different kinds of back pain. For instance, one of the diagnoses I often see is sacroiliitis, and that's a huge word, but it's basically where the sacrum, which is the fused part of the spine, meets the ilium, which is the part of the pelvis, the pelvic ring. And there's a very particular kind of pain that is oftentimes mistaken for axial back pain, and that responds really well to Celebrex, celecoxib. And then once the pain is under better control, we usually refer for physical therapy. And there are things beyond that, of course, epidural shots, for instance, Anton mentioned, and obviously surgery being the last option, hopefully.
So Anton, one of the questions you had, and I can see you've got it on the tip of your tongue.
Well, I think that we're talking about, and these are, kind of the treatment options, but I often think, Brian, particularly as we age and we look at some of our colleagues and you watch their back slowly bending forward and you think, I don't want to be one of those.
Slow drift.
Exactly. Yeah. So are there things that people can do to, improve their posture, to reduce the chance of them slowly kind of bending over with age and time?
Well, I will tell you, my fellowship director, who is a very stern German, had pictured it as the three legs of a stool: posture control, weight control, exercise.
Okay. That's
that
was very worth repeating. So, if you are just joining us,
So if you're just joining, the three legs of the stool are posture control, as Anton mentioned, weight control, keeping your weight down, which is hard for us, especially around Passover, we're eating all this fatty stuff. And then exercise, which is obviously very, very hard. Your brother is a maniac when it comes to exercise. And now we had to dial back a little bit because some health issues. But absolutely, exercise is very, very key. And so just to sort of dovetail to where Anton was asking, how do you keep, from the drifts? And the main thing is to, I always tell patients to keep your ears over your shoulders and your shoulders over your hips. Ears over shoulders and shoulders over hips. And it's very hard rolling your shoulders back.
And Brian, everyone, seems to have their own way of trying to do that, right? My wife believes in gyrotonics. I can barely pronounce the word gyrotonics, but Norma has an excellent posture and she swears by gyrotonics every week. Some people do Pilates, some people do yoga, then there's the chiropractor, then there's acupuncture. What should people be doing to improve their postures?
The answer is whatever you like. What I tell patients is it starts with when you're sitting in a chair. So if you're sitting in a chair, you can't see my backside because it's well behind the camera. Basically, you want to be having your core very slightly engaged. So your stomach muscles slightly engaged. And you really want to not be slouching. You want to be sitting up fairly straight. And you want to get yourself a decent desk chair if you work from an office. If you're like a person who works like in a post office or in retail, it's very, very hard to do that. But you want to generally kind of keep your core sort of slightly engaged when you're standing up. And believe it or not, everything's going to sort of fall from that. And the core, as some people ask me, what the heck's the core? The core are the muscles surrounding the spine. And I always liken it to, if you've ever been to Notre Dame in France, and the Gothic style architecture, you have this huge cement dome, right? And it's held in by these tiny cement walls. But if you look on the outsides, there's these structures called flying buttresses. They sort of hold the walls in and prevent the cement dome from collapsing downwards. Well, your core muscles are those flying buttresses. The stronger they are, the less stress and strain there are on the individual spinal levels, on the discs and the ligaments and so forth. But the average, you know, the average Joe or Jane, to keep their posture, you can do gyrotonics, you can do Pilates. The important thing is when you are working, you're working on your core, the muscles surrounding your spine. And you do that, you're on your way.
Ears over shoulders and shoulders over hips.
That sounds like a song.
Exactly.
It sounds like a Beatles song. It's like a Beatles song.
Are you saying, and I'm curious, that many of the people who come to you, because by the time they come to you, they're in severe pain. It mm-hmm. could have been prevented if you had done certain things.
No, there is no panacea. And I think it's important you brought that up, Nadia. There are people that I see in the clinic that have like a family history of low back pain. They have a history of trauma. Some of them even have what's called compression fractures, where they fall and they break their spine. I know your mom is somewhat aged, and so she's at risk for that as well. So it's important to sort of get regular bone density tests and vitamin D3 and calcium. But there are people that no matter what they do, they will have back pain, particularly certain kinds of athletes. People have been in a lot of car accidents. So these are things that are not willfully or intentionally engaged in, that they just unfortunately got lost the lottery in that regard.
Brian, just a question. You're a very skilled neurosurgeon who specializes in spine. And, the two questions that I have relate to, what kinds of surgeons do spine or specialize in spine surgery, number one. Number two, technology is changing and evolving so quickly, and you're doing cutting edge spine surgery. So can you comment on how technology is really changing the way you approach spine surgery?
Well, it's incredibly fast moving. So surgery on the spine is done by two main sorts of doctors. There's neurosurgeons like myself who do it throughout their residency and training. I even did a one-year dedicated fellowship to just doing spine. I did a smattering or cranial, of course, because you got to take call. But there are orthopedic surgeons who do sort of some spine during their training, and they almost always do at least a one-year fellowship. And they can focus on different aspects of spine, for instance, pediatric scoliosis. And neurosurgeons are doing scoliosis as well. We've been doing it for about 10 or 11 years. It's not a main part of my practice because I focus on mostly minimally invasive and artificial disc arthroplasty, actually. Those are two technologies, and that's endoscopy and disc arthroplasty that I've really focused on. Endoscopy is remarkable. Just like you guys use laparoscopes, we're now using endoscopes. And before, about 10 or 12 years ago, it was very fringy. People thought it was, hoo-ha and snake oil, but it's really great. In fact, through an 8-millimeter incision, I'm able to take out a almost 1.5 centimeter disc. It's enormous. And you wonder, how do you bend space-time to get that out? Well, it's a long story, but you can get it out. Usually in one piece, and it's remarkable how clear the visualization is. And the other thing is disc arthroplasty. So we do put artificial discs in certain patients with back pain or neck pain, and the technology has gotten better and better and better, such that we now have discs that are sort of made of porcelain and coated with titanium, and they do a really good job. They're not 100% as good as your own natural disc, but they're getting darn close.
So I'm just curious on that subject. Everyone's talking about AI, AI, AI. How has AI impacted the world of neurosurgery?
Well, everyone's talking about it. And there are certain Luddites like myself who are not so keen on the idea of AI diagnosing and suggesting treatment algorithms for patients, because I still think people need that human touch, that sort of that unspoken thing, the spidey sense, to sort of understand what's going on with somebody that would prompt you to look in an unexpected direction when you see somebody who may look like they have one thing, but in fact, they have something else, something very dangerous, perhaps. AI is helping. I think it'll be helpful mostly with regards to dealing with insurers, chatbots, you know, getting authorization and things like that. And there are some of my radiology colleagues are somewhat freaking out right now that MRIs will be able to read them better than they can. But we've had some examples of AI reading, overreading patients' MRIs and telling them they have a glioblastoma, which is a very aggressive form of brain cancer, when in fact they don't. And they don't develop it.
So, Brian, just a follow-up question to that. The one thing that I encounter all the time is, you know, Dr. Google. And, every patient of mine will usually, you know, not every patient, but many patients, the first 10 minutes is what they've read about themselves. And, as we know, it's a lot of what people read about themselves is, you know, is actually, that doesn't really apply to them. So I'm interested in your perspectives about Dr. Google. And then the second thing is, you know, we're dealing with an opioid epidemic. And when one thinks about back pain, we think a lot about, you know, people that, I mean, we hear it so often that I'm addicted to, you know, the reason I'm addicted to opioids, someone hit me from behind, my neck hurt, the doctor gave me an opiate, and, you know, I've been taking it ever since. Do you see a lot of people that are addicted to opiates, and are you able to get them off opiates through various means?
With regards to the first question, Dr. Google, so I have had some patients who work at tech companies come in, and they've actually plugged in their diagnoses to ChatGPT, which is one of the chatbots, AI chatbots. It's interesting to hear him. Dr. Google is obviously more, you know, they put in a symptom and they get a litany of things that are wrong with them, and they come in super anxious. I actually prefer patients who educate themselves a little bit, even if a little bit of miseducation, but it can be really anxiety provoking. So, you know, caveat emptor, you have to be careful with what you get on Dr. Google or ChatGPT. So it's okay for patients to look things up. I always tell them I'm actually happier because they know a little bit about the anatomy I'm talking about. And I think a well-educated patient is by far the best kind of patient. They have a lot of buy-in into whether they get better or not. With regards to, the other question that you had. So a lot of times, I thankfully have not seen a lot. When I was in training, we did see a lot of addicted patients, unfortunately, because we were taught that pain was the fifth vital sign. And I'm sure you remember those times when if a patient's pain was not adequately controlled, we're doing a bad job as doctors. And that led to millions and millions of people being addicted to OxyContin, oxycodone, and so forth. I do see some patients that have it, but I tell them is very honestly, I'm going to get your pain down. I'm going to do my best to get your pain down, but you'll most likely never be fully off opioids. So we try to get them off opioids, and we're using other medications that have been around for decades, like gabapentin. Who knew that gabapentin had an effect on acute pain? But in fact, it does. So the shorter answer is we can transition patients usually down significantly. There's other things like buprenorphine. So I almost always work with a pain doctor preoperatively. I sort of give him or her a call, say, hey, there's a patient who's on standing dose. Can you help me manage their pain? And it's very, very difficult to get them fully off because, you know, there's habitual dependence and there's pharmacological dependence. There's all sorts of neurochemical things that change when you've been on opioids for decades. So it's rare to get them fully off, but certainly if I can get them functional again, get their use down so they're not using it as much. That I had a young woman who came down from Fresno. She was in a lot of pain, a ton of pain medications. And I'm happy to say she's not off, but she is significantly reduced when you get that surgery right and you actually address the problems that you're out there to address. It's really, really rewarding. And I'm just very honest with them. We're never going to get down to zero, but if I can get you down to maybe one pill a day versus six, that's a huge win.
You know, Anton spoke about Dr. Google. What about Dr. TikTok? You know, there are so many people, and by the way, Brian, that is a huge reason that Anton and I are doing this podcast, is there are so many people giving advice. So I had a sciatica pain, which you understand well, down the one side of my leg, went on to TikTok, and there are a plethora of people giving you advice or guidance. Mm-hmm. How does that impact you as somebody who understands, and do you see people who are hurting themselves because they are getting the wrong advice?
Well, there's always the potential to misuse technology. And because TikTok is usually like a very short form, sort of bite-sized bits, and people are pointing at things and there are things flashing on the screen. And I have colleagues that that do TikTok as neurosurgeons and spine surgeons. And I've chosen to not do that on purpose because I feel like you need a long form meeting with your doctor because you need to air out those issues. And there's oftentimes there's the hand on the door effect, right, Anton? So when you're about to leave, say, oh, by the way, you know, my foot's been slapping the ground. My left leg hurts a lot. Like, oh, wait, but didn't I just ask you that? And so, you know, you get that thing and you don't get the hand on the door effect from TikTok. And so respectfully to my TikTok friends, and they know who they are, I don't do TikTok, and there is a great potential to hurt you, for people to get hurt if they have the wrong person on TikTok, if they're following someone who perhaps is not a trained professional, he or she is not a surgeon, or if they're giving advice that's, you know, for instance, like you don't need your glasses actually hurt you, or cancer. One of the things I saw is cancer is a figment of the imagination. I'm sure Anton loves those. You know, where cancer is the immune response's way to stamp out disease and things like that. Just upside down, inside out, sort of bending reality type stuff. And you really have to eschew and be very, very careful with what you consume on TikTok. And if you're on TikTok, that's fine. But I always encourage people to back it up with talking to a colleague, a professional rather, that knows more about this than just the 60-second bite-sized commercial type stuff.
And just to expand on that a little bit, Brian, you know, there's so many ads about how you improve the condition of your back, medications to take. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar business. Are there, and you've spoken about spine health quite a bit, but are there any vitamins that you recommend people take? I always get the question asked about probiotics and a variety of different things. I mean, I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
Well, just for $69.99, I can sell you this supplement. You'll never have back pain again. No. It's a great question, though. And I'll tell Nat, I want Nat also, I think Nat wanted me to ask me something too, but I wanted to say that there is no magical formula. However, I do encourage people to eat a Mediterranean diet. So that's sort of olive oil, dark skin fruits, foods with a low glycemic index, kind of how you probably tell people about cancer. You generally want lower amounts of sugar available for those cells to consume. And a lot of those foods are also anti-inflammatory. I encourage people to take krill oil, or if they have dietary restrictions, like if they're kosher and they can't take it, cod liver oil is fine. Incidentally, it's very important to stop those before a week before surgery, because you can bleed more if you take those. So generally want to stop those supplements before surgery. But really the main thing is not eating a lot of sugar, super sugary foods. I mean, should you have a scoop of ice cream every Saturday night? That's how I limit myself. I have one nice dessert a week, and that's pretty much it. But I generally tell patients really not lots of red meat, although it's fine to have a steak now and again, maybe once a week or something. But for the most part, eating sort of a California Mediterranean diet is very, very helpful. And I will tell you, patients out here that are 70 versus patients in the Midwest where I'm from that are 70, there is a huge difference. And I don't know if it's the diet, the weather, the climate, people being outdoors more, who knows? But I do know being active, keeping your weight down, and honestly, getting better posture, those are the three main things. But there is no magical supplement.
The Mediterranean diet also includes a glass of red wine. Does, you know?
Yes.
Absolutely. Is it okay? Is it okay for our, you know, our friends that like their occasional glass of red wine? Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, obviously you have to talk to your doctor and make sure you're not taking medications that could impair you or hurt you by taking a glass of wine. But yeah, I believe a glass of red wine is very acceptable in as long as it's medically approved. I prefer Scotch whiskey myself, but I do like the occasional glass of red wine, and I think it's fine. But again, check with your doctor if you're ever unsure.
So you like the Scottish Mediterranean diet?
Oh, the Scottish. Always.
If you are just joining us, I am speaking to Anton and I for our podcast, Live Long, Live Strong, Live Healthy, are talking to Dr. Brian Gantworker about dealing, mitigating, coping, curing your back pain. We are getting some questions in. So the question is, I have cervicular, is that pronounced? It's cervicular back, neck pain. What and do you see a lot of that? And what is the best way to deal with, overcome? Do I need surgery?
Well, so I think that's a compound question, definitely. Cervical pain is very common. It's not as common as low back pain, but we do see patients with neck pain, obviously. If it's very severe, it's worth visiting a physician to probably get some imaging done. Basically, at the very least, an X-ray, if not maybe an MRI, depending on what the other symptoms are. That's a little bit trickier, but I oftentimes have patients do a series of exercises I call cervical yoga, where they do essentially isometric pushing against your hand in four different directions for about 10 seconds apiece. So Anton's using both hands. So you want to look right. You want to start it in the mirror, and I'll sit back just a tiny bit. He's doing the YMCA now. You want to sort of look in the mirror and bring the heel of your hand to your forehead and push into it for about 10 seconds. And then you move at your hand over, but you keep your head exactly the same place. You bring your elbow up and you push that direction for about 10 seconds. And you do it on the other side and going back, and you do that 10 seconds apiece for about four cycles. And Anton's doing also stretching, which is the other part of it. So you really want to think about your neck like a very mobile but strong muscle, an organ, if you will. Because remember, your neck's main issue, its main job, like Atlas held up the world, is to hold up your head and to be able to turn it. So you have to have a strong and very flexible neck. Now, obviously, if you can't do any of those things and you're in so much pain, it's really time to see a physician. So I do recommend, if you can't do those things, if your back pain, neck pain is severe. And the other question that your listener or watcher asked was, do you need surgery? And the short answer is, unfortunately, that depends. It really depends what's going on with you, what the scans will show, and obviously what your other attendant symptoms are. And of course, what your physical exam shows. Sometimes people can have no back pain at all and have severe spinal cord compression. It's just something I see sometimes. And that's only comes out, you know, flicking the fingers or doing other, you know, voodoo magic stuff when we do our physical exam, that sort of comes out that normally we wouldn't look for in a patient who doesn't have neck pain.
And you said the other very prolific area is the lower back pain. Exercises for that? What do you recommend people do for that?
So I do recommend consulting with a physical therapist or exercise specialist before you do any of these things. But the cervical isometrics you can do pretty much on your own. When it comes to the low back, I'm a big fan of planking. And I don't know if your people know what planking is, but essentially you lie down on the floor, and if you're just starting, usually go on your knees and you go on your elbows, and obviously consult your physician. And if you have mobility problems, make sure someone's in the room, and you can go up on your elbows and on your knees and just hold the position for 20 or 30 seconds, keeping your core really tight. Now, if you're advanced, and even though I carry extra weight, I can do this. I do the regular plank, which is you're on your elbows, your hands are flat, and you go on your tiptoes, and you sort of make a plank like so. Those are hard. I don't recommend doing those for anybody just starting out unless you've done them in the past. Other ones that are very, very helpful, if you're able to, wall sits, but they're very hard. And I do not recommend starting with those, but rather planking is good, even on your knees, and also doing pelvic raises, which is you lay on your back with your knees up and you very gently move your pelvis up and then back down very slowly. And it's important you keep your core engaged the whole time up and down. That means keep your abs tight as you go up and your abs tight as you go down. Don't flip-flop, because if you flip-flop, you're actually having like an explosive movement and it's not helping things. The key about spine is isometrics. Isometrics, whichever way you're doing, whether you're cervical or your lower back, you have to keep it low and slow and a constant tension with the muscles. It's explosive movements. Unless you're training to play in the NFL, it's not helpful.
Brian, my wife, Norma, is trying to get me to do more foam rolling. She's a big foam roller.
Foam rollers are fine. I mean, I'm a big fan of foam rollers. There are also massage chairs, like shiatsu massage chairs, that are really great if for at the end of the day, If you're having a very bad flare, I'll tell your watchers one quick hack that I have. And if you're having a very bad back pain flare, what helps is if you want to lie down on your floor, especially if you have a rug or a carpet, and you put a pillow down and you just lay down onto that firm surface. And you can put your knees up, you can put them down. But a lot of times just stabilizing your pelvis and just lying still for 15 or 20 minutes. And obviously have someone available to come get you if you're stuck with trouble with mobility. But just laying flat and still like that for 10 or 15 minutes really helps your low back pain. So foam rollers are fine. Lying on a flat surface is fine. Some people get very complicated. There are other machines called TENS units, which you can buy for like $40 online, which are fine. I don't recommend the super expensive ones, but a TENS unit is, again, like an isotonic. Well, this one's isotonic, sort of a tetany, if you will, when the muscles sort of fire and then relax. And really, it's almost like a massage in a way. So those TENS units, especially for the neck, are very, very helpful.
It's interesting because I live in Atlanta, Anton, and you are in Los Angeles, but Atlanta was the home of chiropractic because there's huge chiropractic school here. So there are many, many, many chiropractors. I'd love your thoughts on chiropractic. And I know one can't generalize all chiropractors, but is it a useful way of dealing with your back pain?
It can be. And I do have some patients that absolutely swear by their chiropractor. And I have two very good friends who are chiropractors, one who's retired here in Los Angeles, another one who's still very active. I like to partner with chiropractors who don't do a lot of manipulations and quick twitch type movements. I'm not a very big fan of that. And we've all, as physicians, we've always heard patients who can end up with cervical injuries or even strokes from too quick a movement. My advice to people seeking chiropractic is absolutely, that's fine. But I would avoid people do quick manipulations or trying to crack you. Correct. Because you can have something called a carotid artery dissection or vertebral artery dissection, and those can have devastating consequences. Patients can end up very, very ill and disabled if that happens. And that happens basically when the inside of the artery peels away from the outside of it and a blood clot is thrown up and it can cause a stroke. Now, that doesn't happen a lot. It's rare. But just because I'm not a very big fan of that, I don't encourage people to see chiropractors do a lot of cracking. That being said, chiropractors are very aware of body mechanics. They understand the anatomy very well. They are not surgeons, though. So ultimately, if you want to see your chiropractor first, I don't see a problem with that. And oftentimes, I work with them after the fact. I work with some, especially in the Valley and here on the West Side, that are very, very good, who I've worked with for 10, 12 years in some cases, who know not to overstress joints or do too much cracking. And they understand the medical physiology of the exercise, and they can be very valuable partners, especially in the post-op.
Then one of the questions Anton and I discussed before today was, how do you choose your back surgeon? I mean, back surgery is major, major surgery, and you do hear horror stories. So yes. What are some of the criteria?
I would say, and, being a neurosurgeon, I'm obviously going to be biased towards neurosurgery, but there are some very excellent orthopedic spine surgeons out there. I would say you want to seek out a surgeon who seems engaged in your outcome. They have to be vested. And I always tell patients, because I'm sometimes the second or third opinion. Fortunately, I'm the first opinion most of the time, but a lot of times I'm one of three or four very good surgeons in the area out here. And that's what I love about being out here is there's a lot of competition, but we all sort of make each other perform better because there is so much competition. But you really have to be able to connect with your surgeon. They have to listen to you. They have to be able to connect what you're telling them, your scans and your physical exam, and come up with a plan. And they have to have, sort of like playing a chess game. And I'm sure Anton can relate to this. Like sometimes, you do one thing and it doesn't go, and you have to have a backup plan for that. And fortunately, if you're going to have surgery, oh, there's a puppy. If they have a surgery, then you definitely want to have somebody who is vested in your outcome, who is engaged with you, and certainly somebody who will see you post-op. A lot of times patients will have surgery and they may not see the surgeon again for weeks or even months, or only if there's a problem. I don't really utilize those sort of mid-level providers in my practice, so it's always me. I do the dressing changes. I check your wound. I always make sure I'm very involved. And so having vestment in your care is important. And I guess caring at the end of the day is pretty much it. Do you give a darn how the patient does? And unfortunately, a lot of medicines become commoditized and we have very little time with patients sometimes. But I think someone who could spend the time with you, really be invested, engaged, and listen to you. There should always be what I call that awkward pause at the end of the visit. There is that time. Do you have any other questions? And there should be one or two beats. And the patient says, no, I think I'm okay. That's what you want
to hear. I think you and Anton, Dr. G and Dr. B, should do a podcast especially for other physicians. Because, you know, Bernard Lam wrote about the lost art of healing. And just what you both exemplify, the ability to really listen to help. Because people come to you when they're in a lot of pain and very anxious. So unfortunately, we've reached the end of our time together, but a couple of things you're saying, take krill oil or cod liver oil. Cervical isometrics, if you're just joining us, where you literally do that. And I suppose we could go onto your Instagram and your LinkedIn and find out more about cervical isometrics. You say planking is excellent for lower back pain. You've given us some excellent advice. And this is a very hard one, ears over shoulders. That is difficult to do, especially if your neck is slightly forward, ears over shoulders and shoulders over hips. So, yes. I mean, the back is so important. And any last minute questions you want to ask, Brian?
Well, you know, Billy, the red poodle, is also very interested in the things that Brian has to say, because I'm sure it applies to dogs as well in terms of posture. And you know, he's also interested in how what he can do to reduce his back pain. I think I've learned so much. I mean, I'm going to go have a Scottish Mediterranean lunch this afternoon. I'm then going to do a plank, and then I'm going to do my head exercises. So I have learned a fortune. I mean, this has just been such a valuable half hour for me personally, since this is something that, you know, not only do my patients deal with, but I deal with it as well.
Excellent. And I think the value of having your expertise, Dr. G, look, an hour of your time, we probably would be very expensive. So the fact that you have given us 40 minutes of your time on a Sunday morning is very, very, very much appreciated. And I did say that Dr. Gantwerker was world renowned, because right now we have people joining us from South Africa, from Australia, from England, from North America. So you are definitely world renowned, but just very solid advice and guidance. And once again, Live Strong, Live Long, Live Healthy is a podcast that really is helping you cut through the clutter. Because as we all know, there is so much information out there. And to be an empowered patient, it's hard to know what to trust, what don't we trust. So we wanted to bring you real experts, people that know their stuff, tried and tested. And when Anton said that Dr. Brian Gantwerker might be able to join us today and really is a true expert and professional in his field, we thank you so much. So I'm going to just remind everyone that your Instagram, tell us, Brian, is?
It's at CSCLA.
And okay, what does that stand for?
Craniospinal Center of Los Angeles.
So that is your point. Excellent. And then I know you are on LinkedIn, Brian Gantwerker, and you really do share good, solid, sound information. And the world is changing and technology is changing. And what's most impressive about you is the invasive and the non-invasive, the surgical and the non-surgical. And you're looking at it in a very holistic way. So, and final thoughts to whoever's
joining us. My final thought, Ned, is, I spoke to Mom this morning. She is probably watching us live in Johannesburg. Brian, thank you so much for bringing up my mom earlier on, because this is very special for her, and I know that she too will be having a Mediterranean dinner this evening.
Well, God willing, if I ever make it down to Jayburg, I hope to meet Mrs. Bilczyk and see the home.
Please, she would enjoy that. And I will tell you, as a result of these conversations, I have had people tell me they are now exercising who weren't exercising. I have had people saying, because our podcast was catalyzed when Princess Kate announced she had cancer. People saying they are going for scans and having early assessments and interventions. And so that's what we hope to do, because the reality is, you know, Confucius famously said, we all have lots of problems until you are in pain or you have a health issue, and then you only have one. And right, you see people, both of you, who are in physical pain. And if you can help alleviate that discomfort, that pain long-term, and help others prevent that, that's an enormous, enormous goal, right? I'm also curious, though, I was thinking about you, Dr. G, at dinner parties, people knowing what you do, do they then express all their various ailments to you?
Oh, yes. I always get the download, because I always make them go through, just like, you know, we're in the midst of celebrating Passover, there's always the four questions, right? So what do you do? I'm a doctor. What kind of doctor? I'm a surgeon. What kind of surgeon? I'm a neurosurgeon. What kind of neurosurgery do you do? So I do go through the four questions oftentimes, but I try to keep it like I'm very much just a regular guy when I go to parties and stuff. I try just to let my hair down. But I was actually recently at a friend's house not too far from here, and I'd even just walked in the door. One of my former patients was there, who was a mutual friend, and just literally took me out of the party to the back porch and started talking about all these things. So I didn't even have a chance to grab like some hummus. I was just like out the door, out the back, talking to this guy. But it's actually a pleasure, because like you said, you know, our whole raison d'etre, and sometimes people, you know, there's a lot of anti-physician stuff going on lately. And I'm so glad you had us on, because really the reason that Anton and I get up in the morning is to alleviate pain. Our enemies are death and disability. Those are our enemies. And so we get a chance every day to get up and fight the fight. And it really is, it doesn't stop, right? So we thank you so much for having us. And that's really why we get up every day. So thank you.
Well, I was thinking about a good talk for a show on back. You know, it would be talk. There was a show that CNN once had, Talk Back Live. And I think what we've done today is Talking Backs Live. And I thank you both. My partner in the podcast, my brother, cancer surgeon and researcher, Dr. Anton Vilcek, and our wonderful, wonderful guest, Brian Gantwerker, who is a fellowship-trained, board-certified neurosurgeon. You have taught us so much. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.